Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to The Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome back to the show. I'm here today with Phil Johnson. Phil, how you doing?
Great. Travis, it's great to meet you, and it's an honor to be on your show.
Honor is all mine today. Phil created the Master of Business Leadership in a little town right outside of Toronto, Ontario, and he's been doing this kind of work for the past 20-plus years. Phil, why don't you give us a little bit of background of what the Master of Business Leadership is?
The Master of Business Leadership program is a program that I developed to help folks develop their emotional intelligence, become more inspirational leaders, and raise their level of consciousness. I've been working with executives and organizations all over the world for the last 21 years, helping them to achieve better results.
We were talking before the show started, and I'm furiously been scribbling notes, and I'm like, we have to hit record. I've got to capture some of this stuff.
Sure.
From what you said before we hit record, it sounds like a lot of people are going to not really understand what it is that we're going to talk about today. And that's fine if you're listening and you're one of the people that doesn't understand, but we have to know for sure that there are things out there that are not yet explained, that are not yet understood, and definitely not adopted by the masses yet. It's very interesting working through some of these concepts with you that I understand it all. I know what you're talking about. It just has me excited as I'll get out to talk to you today. But what are the three outputs? What do people get from taking this MBL?
The outcomes are you develop your emotional intelligence. You get a higher level of emotional intelligence, which is very important, and I'll discuss why shortly. You raise your level of consciousness about what's going on in you and around you. We're only actually conscious about 3 to 4% of the time. The rest of the time, we're relying on our habits to drive our behavior and our results. So it helps to raise your level of consciousness. And the third outcome is you become a more inspirational leader, meaning that your actions inspire others to want to follow your example.
Absolutely. There's been a lot of talk about intelligence quotient, emotional intelligence. There's all sorts of others like AI, MI. There's a whole big list of these. But what is emotional intelligence?
Very simply, emotional intelligence incorporates everything. But a very simple explanation is that it's the ability to feel the fear and anxiety that change and innovation always creates in us when we leave our comfort zone, and be able to move through that fear and anxiety towards the vision of our desired results, as opposed to allowing that fear to keep us trapped in our comfort zones. It doesn't eliminate fear, doesn't eliminate anxiety, but the development of our emotional intelligence allows us to coexist with it so that it doesn't become a barrier to our moving forward, to our growth.
I like that. I think more people definitely need to work on their emotional intelligence and working their way out of their comfort zone. If you've been a longtime listener to the show, you know that we talk about comfort zone on a semi-regular basis, and everything that you haven't done yet is outside your comfort zone. But every time you do that new thing, your comfort zone gets a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. What are some of the benefits of really stretching your comfort zone?
Jesus, it guarantees the journey, guarantees career and personal success. It fixes everything. I've helped organizations generate over $1.5 billion in revenue and advance in their careers, both professionally and personally, by going through this process. The ROI is never ending. And it actually represents the development of our emotional intelligence has become a critical part of what we need that we never got. Our educational system has failed us, and our employment system has failed to prepare us for the future we're facing. We're facing a tsunami of change with a 500 million year old brain that doesn't like change. Some scientists estimate that in this century, we could experience the equivalent of 20,000 years worth of change or 200 centuries worth of change. So change is increasing at an exponential rate. We're not built for change. There are three primary sources of resistance we have to change. Let me just go through them just briefly. The first one is there's a part of our old lizard brain called the amygdala that's been trying to keep us safe and alive by making sure we never leave our comfort zone. So if we do, it secretes a hormone into our bloodstream called cortisol, and that causes the executive center of our brain to shut off, and we go into what psychologists call a fight, flight, or freeze mode. Some people lash out, some people run away, some people freeze like a deer in the headlights. When that happens in conflict situations, people die. And when it happens in business or personal situations, relationships die. We burn trust. So as an analogy, if you think of your amygdala as a very frightened four-year-old child, the development of our emotional intelligence acts like a big brother or a big sister to quiet the amygdala response down and better enable us to feel the fear and anxiety that change and innovation always creates in us and move through it towards the vision of our desired results, as opposed to allowing that anxiety to control us. So that's one of the biological sources of resistance change we have. The second biological source of resistance we have is our existing habits. Once we develop a habit, it's there forever. It's a neural network pathway that gets created in our brain from our actions. And although we can develop new habits at any age, it's called brain plasticity or neurogenesis, those new habits are always going to be weaker than the old habits, even if the new habits are better than the old habits. So there's going to be an ongoing battle for control internally between our old habits and new habits. So that's the second source of resistance we have to change. The third is sociological, meaning the people around us don't want us to change. So that if we change and we start to get better results, maybe they're going to have to change, and that scares the hell out of them. And the best way to ensure they don't have to change is to make sure we fail. So they can say, look, I told you so, now keep your head down and your mouth shut and get back into the herd with the rest of us. So those are all three very challenging sources of resistance to change, even though the results are phenomenal. So there's only two things that will cause us to go on this change journey. There's only two sources of motivation for moving outside of our comfort zone. One is pain, the other one is passion. Hardly anybody's connected with their passion. So for that, for the group of individuals that are willing to challenge themselves to move outside of their comfort zone and do the emotional labor that requires, it's usually driven by pain. It's driven by an urgent desire for better results than they're currently getting. Another thing, you can think of emotional intelligence training. It's almost like Navy SEAL training for your emotions. A big part of Navy SEAL training is to be able to stay conscious and alert in the presence of fear. So it's rather than simply reacting unconsciously, going into unconscious mode, losing our creativity, losing our presence in the moment, emotional intelligence allows us to feel that fear and stay conscious in the moment. That makes sense?
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot to unpack there. For those in the self-help realm that have been listening to all the talking heads over the last 20 or 30 years, when we talk about resistance, fear, habit, and your sociological culture, that's what everyone else has been talking about. Jim Rohn calls it, you're the average of your five closest friends that you hang around with. There's all these books on habit. Habits take 21 days, and there's 17 cycles of 21 days within a year. And then people talk about the fight, flight, or freeze response all the time. But what do you actually have to do to work through these resistance factors?
The first thing you have to do is you have to develop a strong emotional connection to a desired result that motivates you to leave your comfort zone. So you have to develop a vision, a desired result, You have to develop an emotional connection, not just an intellectual connection, but an emotional connection to something you want to achieve that catapults you out of your comfort zone on a regular basis and through the fear and anxiety that will be created. The division of your desired result has to be stronger than your fear and your ego-based fear. And if it's not, you will not be willing to do the emotional labor that change and innovation requires of us. The old saying, if somebody can talk you out of doing something, let them, because it wasn't that important to you anyhow. If you don't have that emotional connection, nothing else matters. So that's step one.
Yeah, you hear this in the sales, right? People don't buy for need. They buy for want. They buy for that desire.
Well, not only that, but all purchases are made in the limbic part of our brain. All purchases are emotional decisions. So first of all, we make the decision emotionally. Do I like this guy? Do I trust this guy? And then after we've already made the decision, we look for features and benefits intellectually to justify the decision we've already made emotionally. So by developing your emotional intelligence, get ready for this. By developing your emotional intelligence, you are literally able to outcare your competition. You're able to develop deeper trusted advisor relationships with the people you seek to serve than your competitors. There's a part of our brain that brain scientists call, we have these specialized brain cells in our prefrontal cortex that we've had to develop because we've evolved living in society, living in tribes, living in herds. We've had to develop the ability to sense whether somebody's trying to help us or eat us. And scientists call those, they call them mirror neurons. That's why you can walk into a room and get a sense of the energy in the room. You can have a conversation with somebody and get a sense of whether they're trying to help you or control and manipulate you. Those are the mirror neurons. I call them bullshit meters. So you can't fake being authentic. You can't fake being real. See, if somebody trusts you, they'll find a way to work with you, even if you don't have the best technology or the best pricing. Conversely, if they don't trust you, they'll find a way not to work with you, even if you have the best technology or the best pricing. There's actually something called the trust economy that's growing much faster than the traditional economy. It's currently estimated at over $10 trillion a year. Because of the accelerating rate of global change, we can't keep up with all of these changes. So we're relying more and more on the network of people around us that we trust to make decisions. You know, what did you do? How did you handle this? So that your network of trusted advisors as an individual or organization is the most valuable asset you have. And your ability to demonstrate trustability and earn that trust is a direct reflection of your level of emotional intelligence. Let me give you an example of a company that's doing over $1 trillion a year in revenue, whose almost their entire hiring process is focused on the search for people with above average levels of emotional intelligence. That company is Apple. That's why when you walk into an Apple store, that energy you feel is an example of a more emotional, intelligent environment. They're not trying to sell you anything. They're trying to understand your pain and, if possible, provide a solution to your pain. They want you to have a great experience. And maybe you'll go tell your friends and they'll tell their friends. So that's an example of an emotionally intelligent environment. And more companies, Apple, Google, Southwest Airlines, JetBlue, Infosys, Whole Foods, FedEx, Costco, and others, more and more hiring, promoting, and developing emotional intelligence.
That's a mind-blowing set of facts that you just ran us through. Emotional intelligence in the trust economy is more important than technology and prices.
Absolutely. See, I think we're at a tipping point as a species on the planet. And we need to dramatically change our trajectory in order to survive. There isn't a single other species on the planet that wouldn't be better off if we didn't exist. In relative terms, we've been on the planet for about a half of 1 second, and we're facing irreversible climate change. We're facing things like dealing with things like CRISPR-Cas9 gene editing technology, where a grade 10 science student in their basement can create a gene strain that can wipe out the planet, AI, other pandemics. We're really walking through a minefield of challenges, and we lack the wisdom, we lack the emotional intelligence to make the choices needed. A long time ago, Mark Twain once said, he said, if the only way mankind can learn is through experience, I see no hope for mankind. So in other words, if the only way we can learn is by putting our hand on the stove, that assumes that we're going to be around to learn from that experience. And a lot of the challenges we're facing going forward in this century, you don't get a do-over. You got to get it right the first time. You've got to know not to put your hand on the stove before putting your hand on the stove. And that requires a higher level of emotional intelligence. The development of our emotional intelligence is a critical part of our education that we never got. Our schools and businesses focused on our ability to do intellectual labor and did little or nothing to develop our emotional intelligence. And quite frankly, we're leaving a dead cat on the doorstep of future generations because they're totally, completely unprepared for the tsunami of change they're facing. Here's a comparison. I want to compare intellectual intelligence with emotional intelligence. Think of intellectual intelligence as somebody giving you $10,000 a day for 31 days. So at the end of 31 days, you've got $310,000. And think of emotional intelligence as getting a penny that doubles in value every day for 31 days. So at the end of 31 days, you've got $10.7 million. At the end of 40 days, you've got over $5 billion. At the end of 50 days, you've got over $5 trillion. So not everybody can have 160 IQ intellectually. So if you have a high IQ, your parents had a high IQ, their parents had a high IQ, and you inherited that. But anybody can develop their emotional intelligence by doing the emotional labor that requires. And the ROI is far greater than any ROI we can get from our ability to do intellectual labor.
It's very interesting. I love the analogy of getting paid 10 grand a day versus a penny that doubles over time. When I look at the educational system, they teach us really to be compliant workers and taxpayers. They don't teach us thinking outside the box. They do nothing about emotions, actual health, mental health, physical health. None of that stuff really occurs. We're seeing gym time and play time go down exponentially. Creativity time is getting cut out of curriculum. The teachers largely, I can't say all because that would be just a gross overcharacterization, but teachers don't have the experience or the time or the bandwidth, the capacity to actually help their students like they need to be helped. Even if they want to help that student that's completely struggling, when you have so much to do as just through your regular school day, your ability and your capacity to help that person that you wanted to help from the beginning.
Travis, think about this for a minute. Let's go to the 30,000 foot view.
30,000 foot view.
Let's assume the model we live in is incorrect. The model we live in views power as external. You're not enough. You need to be bigger, taller, faster, smarter. You need something more than you already are. It's a zero-sum game. In order for me to win, somebody has to lose. Doesn't it stand to reason that the people that would be, by definition, successful within that model would be the best at stealing other people's energy, would be the best at using position-based power to control and manipulate others? The current level of employee engagement worldwide, according to Gallup, is around 13%. So that means people are working in toxic environments where they don't feel safe to take risk, to step outside of their comfort zone. And that low level of employee engagement is costing the U.S. economy alone over $1 trillion a year. And Gallup has also determined that there's almost a one-to-one correlation between the level of employee engagement and the level of customer engagement. So if your employees don't feel engaged, neither do your customers. Your employees don't feel safe, neither do your customers. If you need a title, leadership's not a title. If you need a title to get people to follow you, you're not a leader. If your actions, if your behavior doesn't inspire people to follow your example, you're not a leader. Leadership's not a position. It's a choice that each one of us needs to make, whether we're folding boxes in the warehouse or signing checks up in the C-suite. We all need to become better leaders. We all need to take back agency over our life and stop giving away our energy to others. That's the key that will reduce the drama, chaos, and conflict we see everywhere. We've been unconsciously giving away our energy to others to run our life. Let me give you an example. One of the MBL habits, the program, is called authentic listening. And the key to authentic listening is not to take anything personally. How somebody feels about you, whether they like you or whether they hate you, has nothing to do with you. It has to do with what's going on inside of them. But if how you feel about yourself, whether you like yourself or whether you don't, is based on how anybody else feels about you, who's running your life, you or them?
Depends on how aware you are, I would imagine.
Well, right. But I mean, if you're unconsciously giving away your energy, or you're giving away your energy to other people to determine how you should feel about yourself.
Oh, then everyone else is running your life. Good luck getting everyone else to go to counseling to fix your problems.
Correct. So when you think about it, people are falling over themselves on social media to try and get people to like them. They're giving away their energy left, right, and center to determine how they should feel about themselves. And that's just one example of how we're unconsciously becoming more resistive, judgmental, and attached to outcome by giving away our energy.
I definitely can't choose what the outcome of a certain event is going to be. All I can set is my intention for how I show up into that space.
Absolutely.
I can show up here expecting a world-class interview and expecting a million people to like this thing and watch it. I can't control any of that stuff, but I can intend to show up with a good attitude, ready to listen, ready to be engaging, sharing energy, and just seeing what happens. I can definitely set that intention. I just can't set the expectation. All the expectations that we set create most of our problems. One example real quick is driving. How do you feel when you're driving most of the time?
Unconscious.
Unconscious? Yeah. Yeah, I think most people do. I know a lot of people, they get angry when they drive.
Oh, right.
And I'm like, why are you angry? Like, well, everyone else should, I think is a cuss word. They should be doing better. They should be doing this, should be doing that. I was like, well, have you ever made a mistake while you're driving? And they're like, well, yeah, you know, that happens. I was like, well, you're willing to give yourself grace, but not them grace. And they're like, okay, tell me more. I was like, when I go driving, I expect everyone to cut me off, stop short, move in without signaling to be complete chaos. So when that doesn't happen, I have a great driving experience.
What you're describing is how our ego controls us, how we allow our ego to control us. See, our ego wants us to feel less than or greater than, but it never wants us to feel equal to. Our ego never wants us to be in the present moment. Our ego wants us to be thinking about the future, which will never exist, or the past that no longer exists, but it doesn't want us to be fully conscious in this moment, because it becomes, when we're not in the present moment, when we're not focused on the present moment, it becomes that much easier for our fears to control us. So we become enslaved by our fear. And as you go through the process of developing your emotional intelligence, it actually creates a distance between who you really are and who you think you are. So it creates a distance that separates you from your ego. So you're not going to change your ego, but you become the observer of your ego. So that's my ego. That's not, you know, ignore that. That's not who I am.
We are not the thoughts that we have in our head. That is not you. That is aspects of you having a conversation. It's so interesting that when we actually step aside and really become the observer, as you said, how it changes everything in an instant. If someone walked up to you and slapped you in the face, what might you do?
Wonder why that happened.
That's definitely one result. Some people would say, oh, I'd hit them right back. Or some people would say, I would run away scared because as soon as someone put their hands on me, they've got to get out of there. Some people would freeze, right? The amygdala response. But all of that being said is we have the ability to create the consciousness in that moment that actually have and take the choice to choose different outcomes. And most people don't follow that.
Let me jump in here and build on that. Somebody slaps you in the face. That person that slapped you in the face is expecting you to respond. Okay? They need you to respond in order for them to keep their walls up. But if you don't respond, if you keep your walls down, they have nothing for them. They have nothing to fight against. So they need you to raise your walls so they can keep their walls up. And if you don't have the emotional intelligence to lower your walls, it creates mutually assured destruction. You fire your ICBMs, I fire my ICBMs, mutually assured destruction. The only chance we have to defuse the situation is that somebody needs to lower their walls first. And that is the person with the higher level of emotional intelligence, the higher level of consciousness, the more inspirational leader. And that creates a feeling of safety within the organization. That builds trust. You see, when people attack you, the solution is not to fight back. Let me read you something from an article I just published some time ago. This kind of talks to this. Next time somebody criticizes or blames you, instead of defending your ego, do nothing. Let their remarks simply wash over you. Allow the false image your ego has created to remain diminished. Become aware of the uncomfortable feeling this is creating. You are now beginning the process of separating yourself from your ego. You have stopped feeding your ego. The truth is, you have not been diminished. You are becoming more conscious. You're beginning to realize that becoming less, quotations, you've actually become more. By becoming vulnerable, you are discovering your invulnerability. The false image your ego has created of who you think you are is gradually being replaced by who you really are. An emotionally intelligent, inspirational leader. That makes sense?
It absolutely does. It absolutely does. So you've been running this program, Master of Business Leadership. You've had all level of executives go through this, resulted in $1.5 billion worth of revenue. What would our world look like if everyone went through your program?
Heaven on earth. Heaven on earth. It would eliminate war. It would eliminate drama and chaos. It would create a win-win-win environment. It would enable us to deal with things like climate change more effectively. Jesus, it would be amazing.
You mentioned that drama, chaos, and conflict all come as a result of the same concept. What, can you delve into that a little bit deeper?
Before we started recording this program, we were talking about the underlying root cause of all drama, chaos, and conflict. Do you want me to go through that?
Yeah, please.
When we're born, we're not born with a conscious mind. We are our conscious mind doesn't kick in until we're about a year or so old. But we are born with an unconscious mind. And we immediately start creating the habits, wiring up our brain, creating the neural network pathways in our brain in order to survive, get food, fit in, that kind of stuff. And a lot of those habits unconsciously cause us to give away our energy. And we do it in a myriad of ways, how we communicate, listen, take responsibility, make decisions, all sorts of ways. But when we're unconsciously giving away our energy, it creates an energy deficit in us. So at the same time we're giving away our energy over here, we need to replace that energy by trying to steal the energy from other people over here. And that dynamic is going on inside of everybody in the world all the time. And that is the root cause of the drama, chaos, and conflict we experience. That drama, chaos, and conflict is a result of this process of unconsciously giving away our energy and creating the environment that makes it easier for us to try and steal the energy of other people. That drama, chaos, and conflict triggers other people to raise their walls and give away their energy more easily than if there is no drama, chaos, and conflict. That makes sense?
Absolutely. So how do we stop giving away our energy?
By developing habits that stop that from occurring, how we communicate. It's the MBL program. I show people how they're giving away their energy in their communications, and I give them better habits to practice to stop doing that. So it's kind of like you're plugging up the leaks in the dam. And when you do that, as you do that, your results go through the roof. You become more emotionally intelligent. You become more conscious of what's going on in you and around you, and you become a more inspirational leader. And that leads to remarkable results.
Which is exactly what we're hoping for, what we're striving for every day in this world.
Yeah, the challenge is that hope's not a strategy. And the reality is this process works like hell. It'll work for anybody at any age doing anything anywhere in the world. But it's hard. It's hard for the reasons that I mentioned, the resistance we have to change. So it comes back to the initial question. You have to develop an emotional driver, an emotional connection to a result that's stronger than your fear. Because without that, you're dead in the water. That you will not be willing to do the work that this requires.
You described before we started recording that there's a group of people that have this desire put above all of their fear. Who's that group of people?
Or the company I was talking about?
I think you said entrepreneurs.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sorry. The entrepreneurs are folks that have that emotional driver, that desired result, that emotional connection to a desired result that catapults them out of their comfort zone and through the fear and that creates. Two common examples. Thomas Edison invented a light bulb. It took him over 1,800 experiments to invent a light bulb. And somebody said, Jesus, Tommy, that's a lot of failure. How in the world did you ever were able to put up with all that failure? He says, what do you mean? He says, I just learned 1,799 ways not to make a light bulb. It was always about making the light bulb. I didn't know how many experiments it was going to take. Same thing with Disney, Walt Disney. He got turned down by over 2,000 banks trying to raise the funding for the construction of Disney World. Eventually, he was able to get that funding and start construction, but he died before Disney World was completed. And somebody at his funeral just said that, isn't it too bad that Walt never got a chance to see his dream come true? The guy says, well, yeah, he really did, because he saw it before any of us, because that's what created the motivation for him to keep moving forward, to bring that into reality for all of us. That emotional connection to a desired result has to be there to begin the journey. That's the starting point. And that's the thing that all entrepreneurs have in common, because without it, they wouldn't be willing to to put up with all of the fear and anxiety and failure that achieving their desired result requires.
Yeah, we see it every day. We see it on social media. We see it in our network of friends. People say, I want to start this business. It might be social marketing, right? It might be Avon or Amway or any of these things, and they want to get the money, get the funds, help people in their network, or they have Tupperware parties, this, that, and the other. And then you see them try, and you try again and try again. And some didn't really have that strong emotional desire, and you see it lasts a couple of months, and it falls away.
Yeah, and that's the difference between, I'm sure they wanted it intellectually, and I'm sure they had very good reasons intellectually for wanting to start their business. But what they didn't understand was it's not the intellect that drives the business, it's the emotion. So they didn't have a strong enough emotional connection to the desired result that they wanted to achieve intellectually, so they failed. Because the real barriers to change are emotional, not intellectual.
That's just so mind-blowing. I can't think of a better thing to wrap this thing up than you've got to have that desire, and it's got to be emotional over intellectual. Bill, we've talked about an amazing amount of stuff today. We talked about your program, Master of Business Leadership, that gives you the emotional intelligence to create the higher consciousness, to create the inspirational leadership. We talked about sources of resistance being in your amygdala, habits and sociological barriers to change. We talked about the solution to drama, chaos, and conflict is the energy physics. Stop giving away your energy so you can raise your own level of awareness. This has been absolutely phenomenal, Phil, and I appreciate you being my guest on the show today. What parting words would you have for anyone listening, and where would you like them to connect with you at?
I would implore people to bet on themselves by developing their emotional intelligence. It will guarantee your success both in your career and in your personal life. And to connect with me, if they want to meet on a Zoom chat, they can reach me through my LinkedIn profile. I've got a link to my calendar on there, so they can just jump on.
Fantastic. We'll have that link in the show notes. And if you love this type of discussion we have today, go to nonprofitarchitect.org/resources. Check out our Ultimate and Complete Podcast Guide. And Phil's not the only one with curriculum. We've got our college course, the Ultimate and Complete Podcast course, available on Forbes School of Business and Technology. There's a link for you to take it right there at nonprofitarchitect.org/resources. Thanks again, Phil.
Trevor, it's a pleasure. Thanks for the work you're doing.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.